The following episode was recorded before March 2024, and while the content shared is valuable and useful, it features Rob, who is no longer involved in the business.
Hey, it's Rob and Kennedy.
Hello! Today on the Email Marketing Show, we're talking about familiarity exposure. No, not like that, you naughty rascal, so you can get more sales.
Oh, I'll put me anorak away. No flashing happening here. It's a good job we don't put out video episodes of all these in full, isn't it? Anyway, we would love to give you something really, really cool, and we'd love to give it to you totally for free.
Is it anorak?
It's not me anorak. We know that you want to make more sales from your email marketing. That's why you're here and listening to us. But you can't do that if people don't click on the links in your emails to go and check out your offers. And that's why we've put together one of our favorite resources. It's 12 super creative ways to get more clicks from every email that you send in this download that we are calling Click Tricks. We want to give it to you totally for free as a listener of this podcast. All you have to do is head over to emailmarketingheroes.com/tricks.
He has started collecting lanyards. It's comedy hypnotist Robert Temple.
And he makes a smashing bolognese. It's psychological mind reader Kennedy.
So, lanyards, what's going on?
Yeah, so whenever we speak at an event, I'm keeping the lanyards in a little speaker. You know, you get the speaker lanyards thing.
Yes.
Ordinarily, I just take all the stuff you get from events and just throw it out. But like, you know, the brochures and all that. But now if we speak at an event, I'm keeping the lanyard with the speaker thing on it and the brochure, if they've got one as well. And my little pat on the back to us.
That's nice. Are you going to, have you got big plans for it? Have you got like some artistic, no, you won't have, have you?
No, they're currently just lumped together in piles on my shelf.
Oh, lovely. So you just use them as tat to...
But the plan is to display them somehow nicely.
Oh, that'll be nice.
Like we're a prize horse.
Like a prize horse.
You do make a good bolognese, mind. I have to say, I was quite late to the world of pastas and things. I didn't really eat that stuff till I was in my 20s. But I remember it was at your house probably where I dug into it properly at the time.
It's a good time, isn't it?
You do make a good bolognese, apart from, I think the first time you met my... So you already knew her through a different route, but when me and my ex got together...
That sounds seedy. You already knew her through a different route.
Me and my ex got together and we came to your house and you already knew her, so you hadn't just met her. But when we first got together, you came over and you totally ballsed it up, didn't you?
Yeah, I ballsed it up completely. It was absolutely...
It was a bollocknaze.
It was a bollocknaze. It was absolutely horrible. Mm. Anyway, hello. Every week on this show, we show you how to make more sales and earn more money from your email subscribers. We talk about email marketing strategy, tactics, psychology, and share what's working right now to make more sales online. And that basically makes you the email marketing hero of your business with a brand new episode every Email Marketing Wednesday. Make sure you hit the subscribe button on your podcast player.
Right. Let's get into it.
Right, let's do this thing.
Let's do some content, shall we?
Okay. So, familiarity exposure? Some people call it mere exposure. Do you want to talk about what the hell that is?
Yes, nothing to do with meerkats. Basically, what we know is that there is psychologically an increased likelihood of people buying from you when something feels familiar, right? So if they feel like they've heard of something before, you know that like somebody might mention somebody's name and you're like, I know that name from somewhere, but I've got that sort of vague familiarity, but I can't quite think what it is. That's all it needs to be, is a little feeling of familiarity. A couple of things where this happens. It's one of the reasons why people buy the sort of household famous brands, even when they're more expensive. Or, you know, like the old cynical thing everyone's granddad probably says about, you know, it's the same stuff in the packet, whether you buy it from this shop or from the cheap shop. Like, it's probably being made in the same factory.
In the same factory. Why are you buying those beans, son? I'm like, well, they taste nicer. It's the same. Not, Dad.
So it's the reason why people will buy stuff that I think some stuff, not all of it, but some stuff, I think objectively probably does taste exactly the same. Right, I won't go as far as cheap pop, right? Cheap fizzy drinks that taste crap. But
no, Coke and Pepsi taste different, don't they?
Yeah, but like I like the knockoffs of those. I like custard cream biscuits and bourbon biscuits. And honestly, if you buy the cheap ones, they don't taste that much different. So like stuff
sometimes
like that.
The cheap ones are nicer.
I know. So stuff like that. But people will still go out and say, no, I'm going to buy the McVitie's thing, or I'm going to, you know, yeah, I'm going to buy Fox's the House of Brand, even though it's more expensive. Or, and this is, I'm definitely guilty of this, I'll go to a restaurant and I'll look, there's one restaurant we went to for Rachel's birthday, if you remember, there's a massive menu. It's the only pub I've ever been to in the world where they'll sell every cuisine you've ever heard of. And it's all good. Like, it doesn't matter what you get. Everyone loves all of it. They've got hundreds of dishes, but I like got something quite boring, like as in something I've had a lot, rather than trying something new, because I just know that I like that. And if I eat that, that's going
to
be good.
I think a lot of people do that. Like, I know when I go for a curry to a new place, especially to a new place, I'll have a chicken tikka masala.
Right.
And it's a cliche of a dish, but because if you have a new dish in a new restaurant and it's not very good, or it's really good, you don't know it's because the restaurant is good or because the dish is really good. So you got to be careful, folks. You got to be careful.
So basically what we're saying is it's this idea of feeling that something is familiar and comfortable and warm, and it doesn't matter how adventure prone you are, it doesn't matter how excitable you are, you know, it doesn't matter how much, you know, you are into adrenaline. Ultimately, we all like our home comforts, don't we?
Yeah, we like to like kind of know how things are sort of going to be. And I think the way we use this is you can anchor familiar things to what it is that you're doing. I remember, I don't know if this is true or not, but somebody told me that the Katy Perry song Firework was, I think it was Firework. Again, this might not be true. But I was told, so we're gonna go with a proviso that we're gonna believe it's true for the case of for the instance of this. I should have gone for an example that was definitely fucking true. But anyway, we've now muddied the waters, folks. We're on this journey together.
It's true. Katy Perry had a song called Firework, and you listened to it, right? So that's true.
That happened, right? The bit that I heard is that song, that everything about it was scientifically designed to be a huge hit. As in, they looked at what are all the songs that always do well. They have this tempo, they have these sounds, they have this instrument. They're about this kind of uplifting topic. I'm also realizing I know nothing about song construction. So this is the fucking worst example anyone's ever given of anything ever.
You should know everything. You're learning to DJ. Anyway, what happened was they funnel hacked pop music, basically.
And it was a massive success because they took things that were familiar to an audience. There's like, that's why so much of music, like if you listen to like, you put the radio on of like what the music that's coming out now is, a lot of it is heavily sampled music. Even bits you don't even realize are sampled. You know the song Tipsy? Everybody in the club getting tipsy. You know that song? Well, there's a bit of a sound at the beginning, which is like tsh, 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 at the beginning of the track. That track went massive. Just that sound, those drums, are actually a sample from the clap sound that's in the song We Will Rock You by Queen.
Yeah.
Right? So what we do is we lean into these familiar things. And we do it all the time with everything we're doing. Something that sounds like a familiar song, that feels like a familiar thing, that sounds like a familiar thing. Familiarity is such a comforting thing.
Even further than just it sounds a bit like the clap from We Will Rock You is when people sample other songs. For example, if anyone releases a song that samples Robert Miles' track Children, I'm driving and I just get excited. I like cranking up because it's such a great tune. And just as a total aside, the Tears for Fears song, Everyone Wants to Rule the World, there's a little bit of that I, whenever I listen to it, I can't help but think of the Postman Pat theme tune. So next time you're in the radio and they blast a bit of Everybody Wants to Rule the World, just listen out for the little bit that sounds like the Postman Pat theme tune if you're in the UK.
Well, another one of those, actually, talking about things that sound like things, is there's a bit of Bohemian Rhapsody when it's like dun, 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 in that bit. I'm always like dun, 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 it's cold outside. There's no the Red Dwarf theme tune. There's no kind of atmosphere. It's all that anyway. Yeah.
But what's interesting is obviously we're making light of those little funny instances where we, for some reason, I've heard it and I've got loads of people who are in the car to go, listen, doesn't that bit sound like Post and Pat and nobody can hear it? Yeah. But in my head, I've connected those dots, right? And so this is so powerful. The thing doesn't even have to be real. You just have to be deluded. Like, people will find their own little connections and their own little weird things, which is interesting. So
yeah. So, how do we go about using this stuff then? So we can see that this is baked into lots of stuff that we all do and the way we all think, and we link things together. That's what our brains do. Think about the neurology, the science in our heads. What our brains do is they link things together. And that's what creativity is. Creativity is not usually inventing anything. It's usually the ability to assemble things in ways or connect things that people have not connected before. That's what comedy is. Comedy, a lot of stand-up comedians are just taking bits that you thought, oh, I've never thought that was a bit like that. And the reason we can identify with those comedians when we go, oh, well, it's just, that comedian's so good because they just talk about everyday life, is because of familiarity. So how do we go about doing it? So one of the things that you can do is start using things that are familiar to your audience. A thing that a lot of people do is they'll grab, and there was a big trend about them about maybe a year ago. I don't see as many of them these days. Maybe they don't convert as well anymore. But for a while, there was this trend of using famous GIFs and memes on sales pages and in emails. So you might have a friend's GIF or a friend's meme being used. If your target audience knows what that is, I mean, Friends is one of those shows which luckily it's quite a safe bet for most demographics. But there are a whole bunch of people like who would really respond to Buffy the Vampire Slayer memes, right? Or and there's just a whole bunch of people, I think there's a couple of people who even know what Dawson's Creek is. Do you know what I mean? You could be that.
To show you the power of this, let's go with Friends for a second because that's dead easy. If I sent you an email and the subject line had an emoji of a sofa and just the word pivot with loads of O's in it, Kennedy famously doesn't really like Friends but knows some of the big famous, like, I don't want to call that a joke because it's not even a joke, is it? But like
references.
Reference, right? You know it, right? Like, you know, if you could do how you doing somehow to like represent Joey's thing. Like stuff like that.
Even if it was called the one with the...
Right. Those references, if I just put the word pivot in an email and an emoji of a sofa and Friends had never existed, then that's one of the worst subject lines in history. But with an emoji of a sofa and the word pivot, because the word pivot's like a weird word anyway, the word pivot, with Friends in our world, it's a really good subject line. It's an excellent subject line because it has, like, it comes preloaded with so much stuff. Whether you like Friends, hate Friends, it doesn't matter. As long as you've heard of it, and not everyone will have done. Like, my parents wouldn't get that. But
right.
It's well known enough that a lot of people will. Likewise, I've never seen a lot of famous films. I won't start naming them because you'll laugh at me. There's loads of famous films and TV shows I've never watched.
Name a famous film you've not seen. Star Wars. We've both not seen it.
I've seen one Star Wars film in my life, The Return of the What's It. I think it's sponsored by KB Crisps.
What's it?
Yeah, The Return of the... One of the things that returned. I don't know, there was a Return of the Sith as well, wasn't there?
I don't know.
Anyway, so I've seen one of the Star Wars films for my birthday when I was a little kid.
I think that one was called Sith Who's Back. Back again. Sith Who's Back.
Anyway, there's loads of TV shows I haven't seen. For example, I can give you an example of that. I've never seen Game of Thrones, but it's been watched by so many millions of people that if you referenced that episode where they couldn't get the sofa up the stairs...
In Game of Thrones.
And they had to pivot.
Mate, that's the scene I want to see.
I've never seen it, right? But whatever's famous in Game of Thrones.
Can't get the throne up the stairs and he's just there going, pivot!
That's the game? That's how it works. It's just 11 seasons and they're trying to get a throne up some stairs. That's the game. Anyway, never seen it. But if I made a famous Game of Thrones reference, it wouldn't land with me, but it would land with loads of other people. And so because again, you send emails in you know, quantity, don't you? You send an email today, then another email either tomorrow in a few days' time. Like, you have the opportunity to sort of rotate through these references. So again, just to prove the point of this psychological bias that sits underneath this this familiarity thing is just the fact that the minute I put the word pivot on a sofa, loads of people instantly come into that email in a totally different place from if that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. I think another one of these biases to really think about is not just familiarity with other stuff, but familiarity with you and being exposed to you a lot and building that trust. It's this exact principle that means celebrities can release perfumes, aftershaves, clothing ranges, you know, all this kind of, I said laundry. They can release laundry. They can release clothing ranges.
All the underwear becomes laundry, isn't it?
That's true. That's probably where my brain went with it. And they can do all these things because they're familiar with that celebrity. That celebrity brings out that new range of whatever. And because of that relationship with the person, then they're able to go, oh, I might even consider buying it. So that's the same for you showing up. We've got to show up regularly in people's email inboxes, like for us every single day. It's got to be at least 3 times a week to even build that relationship with them. So again, we've got this sense of familiarity and to us and what we talk about, the fact that we're going to be there.
It's such a good point. I mean, think about Britney Spears. Can you think she's sat in the lab with her goggles on going, shh, I'm trying to get this perfume right. No, it needs a bit more pepper or whatever. Like,
I think that's how it came out. I mean, I don't want to get any slanderous cases here, but I think what happened is the reason she released a perfume is there was somebody like listening at the door and all they could hear from inside the room is Britney Spears going, and they're like, what are you doing? I'm inventing a perfume.
Yeah, or David Beckham sat mixing his aftershave, right? None of us believe that to be true at all, right? None of us believe that to be true. And if you did, I'm sorry to break it to you, but that's not what happened. Some perfume company made a perfume and paid David Beckham to put his name on it, is what I'm assuming happened. When you think about what's actually happened there, right? That's like us going to David Beckham and saying, hiya, do you fancy making it look like you've made an email marketing course? We'll just call it David Beckham's Guide to Email Marketing. And he says, yes. I reckon we would sell some, right? Maybe I'm stretching that too far. But the point is you can take commoner garden products like, you know, perfumes.
I mean, I think if as long as it's associated with the brand, right? So if as long as it's, like, if we showed up and said, hey, we've invented a perfume, you might go, actually, that's going to make me not want to buy the perfume, right?
But if you take the world of celebrity...
Yes, exactly. Or if there's somebody who, I can't think of who a really good celebrity would be for like the email thing, but somebody who, a tech person, like a big famous tech person. It might be Elon Musk or some, I don't know, somebody like that. I know he's gone beyond and tech and other things, but yeah.
It's the reason why Richard Branson and the Virgin brand can do anything and nobody questions it. Like they can start Virgin anything, like from telecoms in the UK, at least. I don't know about the rest of the world, but in the telecoms, they in the UK, they're one of the biggest providers of TV and mobile and phone, you know, telecoms.
Wi-Fi broadband, the whole
Wi-Fi
thing.
Broadband, mobile, everything. And then they've launched a luxury cruise line and they'll do hot air balloon rides, you know, as like experience days. And
they've
like,
got a bank.
They've closed down more businesses than I'll ever open, right? Just because they just make businesses every 3 minutes and some of them work, right? But the reason why they're able to not be the laughing stock, because we've met people at events, right? Who we meet them maybe this month and then we'll meet them in a year's time and we'll meet them a year after that at events. And we'll go, oh, hi, yes, we met. That's right. What are you still? And they go, no, I'm doing this now. And we sort of laugh about it to them and say, you're like, you know, what are you doing this week? Like, the reason why Virgin can get away with that, the reason why Branson can get away with that and other brands can't is that they've built up this like reputation for taking stuff, disrupting it, and making it amazing. And now they're able to roll out anything they want to. And we just go, oh, of course, that's fine.
It's all a relationship, isn't it? And you know, think about your brand as like, I need to have a big logo and that. Just think about when people think of you, what do they expect? When they think of us, they expect it to be probably quite funny, quite cheeky, edgy, a bit sweary, and really practical, like to cut through the bullshit. That's our brand. That's what we're all about. Whereas if you showed up to one of our, if we're doing an event, you show up and we're like in like really serious formal attire and we're telling you about, you know, the corporate, what's it? You'll be like, what's going on? That wouldn't fit. Whereas anything we launch, you would imagine it's going to be like, because of that relationship we've got with our audience.
That led a while ago to, you know, when we launched and ran a few years ago, our Level Up Mastermind, which we ran, we ended up having to take two intakes of because it was obviously capped in order to create a good experience, but so many people wanted to be part of it. That only came about because people said to us at the time, we love learning this email marketing thing from you, but like, listen, we can tell from our coaching calls and stuff, there are insights that you don't have time to share with us on those calls because those calls have to be our email about offer creation and funnel stuff and pricing and hiring people, you know, and even more abstract or separate concepts to do with, you know, profit and like, you know, bigger picture things. They were like, we can tell there's so much of that you could share. You know, is there a place where we can learn that stuff from you? And that evolved very quickly into, because we went, okay, into our mastermind, right? And we churned the mastermind out and sold out two intakes of it in next to no time. And again, that only came about because of the familiarity. Like if we'd taken that and then gone to the market in general and tried to launch it, we'd have had to do tons of work to even give it a chance in terms of the marketing and all of that jazz. Whereas with this, we just put up a page, said, this is what it is. This is how much it is. Would you like it? And people said yes. And it sold out two intakes very quickly. So I think, again, even though it was nothing to do with email, so we weren't relying on any of our like demonstrable knowledge, if you like. It was all just based on people had seen, they'd seen us teaching email. They'd got a glimpse there might be more under the surface. And then they were, that was enough. That familiarity was enough to drive them to spend $12,000 a year.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing. So let's get into some ways you can actually do this stuff and really practical sense. So all the things you could do to build this kind of this feeling of familiarity with what you're doing is something we love to do is to actually involve your subscribers in the creation and building process of the new thing. And that could be, hey, what do you need help with? We're going to put a new program together this year, but we want to make sure it's the most valuable thing it could be. Let us know what you want to learn and build it from that point. You can definitely do that. All the way through to if you've already know what you want to teach, but you want to come up with a cool name for it, or you've got the name for it, voting on the logo for it or the cover for it. We did that when we launched this podcast. We already had the name for it. We knew it was going to be about email marketing, obviously. We were like, we kind of knew what the logo was going to look like, but we weren't sure of the colors. We had one version which was blue. Do you remember that back in the day? And one version which was red, or like comedy club brick walls. So we stuck it up online onto our free Facebook group, the Email Marketing Show. We sent it out to our email list and we asked people to tell us which one they preferred. So people became involved, invested, because then a few weeks later when we launched the Email Marketing Show, people felt familiar. People felt like, oh, I've heard of this thing. Well, of course you have, because you were involved in, even if they didn't vote and participate in that voting process and in having an opinion, they still heard about the thing. And that's a really cool thing. So that's one thing you can do. Involve people in the creation, the naming of, the branding of, what time of day do you want to meet for the coaching calls? Like any decision point you're making, think, oh, can I also ask my audience? Can I also ask, drop an email about that?
There's a bunch of our campaigns that we use where we use this familiarity principle in order to do it. Things like our Encore campaign. So if you're a member of our stuff, go and check out the Encore campaign. Basically, you show somebody an offer, you take it away, you come back and loop around and do a closing bit a bit later on. And when they see it the second time, even though it might be a month down the line, there's a sense of some familiarity that wasn't there when it was a cold offer. And for us, that works way better than here's the offer and then trying to sell it to them for days and days and days immediately. Likewise, in our Open Day campaign, there's a thing where we will run a simple survey that seems to be completely unrelated. It just seems like a random survey. You've asked them a quick question in. And when they fill in that survey, it gets them into the mindset of thinking, oh, I quite enjoy the idea of being able to ask Robin Kennedy a question to help me. And then you can loop around a few days later and say, hey, would you like to come on a live Q&A call and ask us some questions? They come into that email now, which seems unrelated. But when they come into that email, they're thinking, oh yeah, that sounds great, because there's a familiarity of having wanted to ask us a question through the survey, right? So there's this sense of familiarity that we're creating in quite a lot of our campaigns. So members, go and check out the campaigns, you will see it's just riddled throughout them. What the way we put our campaigns together is that they have all these psychological principles baked into them. So you don't have to worry about figuring out where do the principles go. Just follow the campaign, follow the instructions, and the principles are baked into the campaigns by default. We do teach the stuff in the campaign workshops, obviously, but if you don't need to understand that, you just want it to work, just follow the instructions and it just does.
It's just baked in. One of my favorite things is this idea of if you just show up with a discount straight away and be like, hey, there's 50% off, right? Which happens like multiple times of the year. The problem with that, if you haven't already legitimized the offer, like by the basically saying, here's the thing at full price.
Yeah.
There's no familiarity with it when you show up with a discount, right? So that's one of the reasons, for example, if you've got a, if you've got like, we've got our thing that we teach, which is the score email engine. And the very first thing we do is have people go through a sales campaign. So you give people a sales campaign. And the second campaign is a content-led sales campaign. But when someone shows up to a hotline, like one of the Q&A calls with our membership, and they say, oh, my sales campaign's not performing that well. Should I remove it and get people straight into the much higher converting content-led campaign, the next campaign? And we're like, whoa, step away from the keyboard, don't touch anything. Because the only reason that content-led campaign, where you might be giving an additional bonus or you might be giving a discount or something away, the only reason that works is because of the familiarity you built up with the sales campaign. They already trust that it is a discount because I was just being told about it at full price for the last 6 days, or it is a bonus because I saw that it wasn't included beforehand, and this is a limited time discount. So by legitimizing, you've got to really legitimize discounts and bonuses and things like that, and you do that by really planting that seed and creating that familiarity.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. And the more that your audience continues to see this stuff and the whole thing is held consistent, the more chances you've got of them buying from you. So this literally increases sales. And again, because it's like a flavor or a spice you can sprinkle in everything you're doing, right? You can sprinkle it through every communication you put out. And the more you do it, the more natural it becomes. So I think one of the challenges with doing this episode for us actually is we've had to really dig deep and go, where do we do this? Because it's everywhere, but it's become such like second nature to us that actually it does just happen. So let's give some really, we've talked about little cool things you can do, like, you know, reference famous pop culture in terms of subject lines and stuff like that. But the basis that sits underneath this, the stuff that you can easily do starting straight away that is the most powerful stuff, is the stuff where they get to know you through your emails. So let's give a few examples of how we're doing this all of the time to bring this episode to a close, that you can start doing this immediately. And again, you'll see why it works. You'll also see why it's baked into our stuff. If you just follow our stuff, you'll see you'll be doing this by default. But let's talk through some of those.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing to do really simply is to keep showing up really consistently. If you don't show up, if you're like that absent friend, then people are not going to remember who you are. So there's no familiarity. So making sure you show up. For us, we show up every single day. So we're consistent about that. We're not showing up every day for a week and then disappear for a week and all that kind of stuff. You want to have a sending frequency which you can keep up with and be consistent about. So 3 times a week, 4 times a week, 5 times a week, only weekdays, 7 days a week, only weekends, whatever it's going to be, showing up and being consistent. The second thing we do is we share personal stories. So we do at the very top of every single one of these episodes, we share a personal insight. So in our emails, we talk about Rob's dog. We talk about my cats. We talk about stuff that's personal. I went to the theater. I did this. I've been on this place. I've never done that before. We're sharing personal stories, which again, breeds a familiarity with us personally. And here's the really big thing. We want to take up more space in people's minds. We all have the same amount of space in someone's email inbox because every email is pretty much the same size physically, right? In terms of before you open it up. But if we can take up more space in people's minds and show people that we're more real than other people, they understand us more. That means when it comes to buying something to solve the problem you solve, they're way more likely to buy it from you because you are the person who's taken up more space inside of their minds. So there's a bunch of things you can easily go and do. And like Rob said, this stuff is baked in already. If you're already a member of our program, you don't have to learn that this principle exists. You just need to know that it does, and it's built into almost every one of our campaigns. If you want to go and check it out, it's called the Email Hero Blueprint. Go to emailheroblueprint.com, emailheroblueprint.com. You can check out all of the details of the entire program. It's everything you need from A to Z for your email marketing, right? So emailheroblueprint.com is the way to go and check all of that out. But let's get into this week's
subject line of the week. Subject line of the week.
What have you got for us?
This one is the words Shy Ben's Getting Out! Exclamation mark in brackets explained. So Shy Ben's Getting Out is a Northeast colloquialism. It basically means if you don't ask, you don't get. Shy kids don't get anything is the literal sort of translation of it. And so I put that together with the words explained. What's quite cool about it is the words themselves, if you're not from the Northeast of England or England, because I guess people across England could probably figure that out, maybe, I don't know. Anyway, if you're not from an area where you'd understand what that means, it looks like interesting words, and the words explained give you the confidence that, oh, I'm going to find out what that means when I get inside. If you are from the Northeast or you are from the UK and you are cultural enough to know what Shy Ben's Getting Out means, or maybe you've heard it before, that means that you... the words get your attention because you rarely see that sort of expression in such a sort of what feels like a formal context, the subject line of an email. And the word explained is what, you know, what's that got to do with email marketing? So it sort of has a slightly double meaning. But obviously most people won't have heard that before. So if you're from New Jersey or from Indonesia, you know, wherever you're from, find something local and colloquial or in your language or whatever and use those words, put the words explained, and then that'll get them.
Love it. That's this week's
subject line of the week. Subject line of the week.
I like the idea of doing it in another language. When you said that, there, I was like, that would be cool. Like, use, like, we could grab, you know, like a nice phrase in German and then explained, and then into it, we could talk about the. I mean, that's a cool idea of doing it in a different language. Yeah. Loads of food for thought in today's episode this week. Thanks again for listening to the whole show. If you're brand new to the show, welcome. It's great to have you with us. We do this every single Email Marketing Wednesday. So do make sure you hit subscribe on your podcast player, and a brand new episode will download to your device next week. We'll see you then. Have a good one.